And you know, I give you this knowing that I'm under oath, and you know we're in, you know, it's a I don't know what it is, if I misrepresent to an officer of the court or whatever it is, but I'm good. I'm saying yes to everything. Let's go ahead. Waive all my rights. Yeah. So shoot.
Well, thank you. Well, I had talked with Shannon about an idea I had to develop a legal education business that is intended to kind of fill, not kind of, to fill the gap between business, startup businesses or small businesses who try to save money on attorney fees and downloading documents or other steps by themselves on the internet.
They get in so much trouble. It's epidemic now.
It is, and I get...
We get them into our place, and they see what they've done to themselves and start to fix it, mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, I mean, I'm a great proponent that you just can't, you've got to pay for good law, and, you know, you never are shortchanged by getting the best legal advice, and everything's customized. There is no standard template for anything.
There is. I tell that to clients all the time, even myself, when I'm drafting contracts that I developed by myself, I don't just paste names. I have to think through each section. Some sections may stay the same, but the sessions that you're paying for me to think through, that's why you're getting an attorney.
Well, I mean, a contract, a will, anything like that. I mean, they just mm-hmm. get to be, they'll write their own will, and they have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, one, they didn't circumvent probate. Two, in probate, they're going to have their guts ripped out, and they didn't realize what they did. They don't have a clue. I mean, they just, like, that was a legal Zoom document. You know, it was, why is this happening to me? And they forget all the caveats LegalZoom has out there. And, you know, they don't care because they're making a little bit on millions. And it's just, it's a little disingenuous. I think LegalZoom has hurt the market.
It's hurt attorneys. When clients come and ask for prices, they want you to compete with, well, I can get it on LegalZoom for this. Well, okay, that's what you're getting from LegalZoom. Now, I went to LegalZoom's website, and they do have, it looks like, you know, you can download, get the basic forms with all their disclaimers, and then it looks like there is a place where you can hire an attorney, but once you go in there, you can get information and ask stuff. So I didn't get to poke around there, and I'm not exactly sure how they do that, because their terms of use say we're specifically not attorneys, but then when you hire an attorney,
I actually think at this point, I'm sure, I just assume that because they're populated by lawyers, that they have a brokerage service that they're brokering into each state bar. Because, I mean, they can't permit a Minneapolis lawyer to, I mean, they might be able to conduct certain work across state lines, but they can't do, for instance, they might be able to do a license.
Yeah,
but they can't do a divorce. They can't do a litigation. They can't do, you know, they really have to be licensed under the umbrella of the state to represent that resident.
Mm-hmm. So they have to have that service. So where this, what my idea is, it's not, and part of it is, it's not in replace of lawyers, but in my business networking groups, I've been with the small startups and small businesses where they say, hey, even if we wanted the legal fees, we can't afford to do it. So I was thinking, okay, let's come up with a legal startup kit that comes through each, there'll be a series of topics that every business is going to have to deal with, regardless of what industry you are in, corporate entity formation, contracts, independent contractor, agreement, social media, website policy, intellectual property. And then each segment, there's going to be a webinar that gives you an overview of some basics. And the goal is to help you be aware of when you really need to get help. Here are the issues. Come up with a comprehensive checklist of everything that you need to consider for this subject matter, best practices, and red flags. Then there will be some, you know, if there's a document or a contract or, you know, a social media policy or a sample consulting service contract. And when you go through the different sections, it's going to be, look, when I get to this part of the template, these are the factors that I consider. These are the questions that I need to go through. And then you can have one comprehensive checklist of all the subject matters together so that in one end, the goal is at least you know when you issue spot. If you're going to try to do it on your own, you're pausing and you're thinking it through. Or if you go to an attorney to help, you're going to have a lot of the legwork done, and it will help quicken your time and make your time with the attorney more efficient. And I will somewhere say it right in there. My goal is not to replace attorneys. It is to help you identify and at least get some of the basics and the foundation set. There are some laws that if you show a good faith effort in complying, it can minimize your liability, the Fair Labor Standards Act, for instance. Some of the employment laws, if you have certain policies in your employee handbook, which my template would have, you can avail yourself to an affirmative defense that if all the conditions are met, you can get out of jail card. So it's those type of things, at least get those in place. Because honestly, I'm tired. I don't know if tired's the word. I don't like it when clients come to me and they're embroiled in litigation. Right now I have a case where it's settled for $40,000. The initial demand was for $650,000. They were embroiled in litigation for 9 months because they didn't want to pay an attorney at most $1,500 to work out a shareholder's agreement and make sure that the corporate bylaws were okay.
I see it all the time. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me how some of these self-employed entrepreneurs don't get it, they don't see the cost potential. I mean, you're such an insurance policy that will never happen, the 9 months and the $40,000 out. And this is how you make a living. I mean, it's the good news is that help people to teach students that do it themselves. But it's frustrating when you see the futility of it. And it's a little toxic. That's a toxic side of law, compared to like the front-end contract work, license work, things like that. You get a lot of, while you're building your business, you'll get a lot of clients out of our place. It's kind of an amazing place for rainmaking for law firms. I mean, we're kind of known for that. But when you tell them you're a contract lawyer and you're a preventive lawyer and you do a employee manual, and you do this every time you're sitting there. But so when you're coming to our place, you can spend a lot of time on your billable hours with your clients, surprisingly. You pick and choose classes you want to go to and don't go to others and do conference calls and Skype calls and things. But the breakfast, lunch, and dinner, those are like booths at a trade show.
Okay.
And there you're meeting people who can be investors to help you with the launch of this, or you can meet people that are the teammates that you need to pull it off and develop it creatively in every other way. And you can meet law clients without any conflict at all. So you can say, you have a piece of paper and it's got two sides. Now, remember, I'm presumptuous here. I'm speaking from knowledge of 27 years of my market and trying to position what you've got coming in. And we work with larger law firms. I mean, the people that, have taught at this place for years is, Pillsbury and McDermott, Will and Emery. I mean, the biggest firms. Lock and Lord is teaching right now. And those are, big global firms. And it's senior partners teaching. But as you come in, as you can appreciate, they'll get higher-end clients. Everyday clients need $1,500 for contract, $3,500 for employee manual or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get it. They're going to Lock and Lord for that. And solo entrepreneurs are 40% of our group. They're not going there. But we have more successful solo entrepreneurs, as you can appreciate, just by the price. It keeps people to a nice level. But on one sheet is the overview of the business. And, you can have something like LegalBoom.com, teaching you how to use legal services, not how to get them. The anti-Zoom. And you're not stepping on their trademark, but that's very cute phrasing. And it gives you the we're purloining purloining $100 million brand where they can't do anything with LegalBoom. We trademark it. and then teaching how to use rather than get the legal help you deserve as an entrepreneur. And we coin that, you know, if you're an individual and you want help, go to Legal Boom. If you're an entrepreneur, come to Legal Boom. And our ads on television, that's all it says, and bang, they all come. Then what I would do is a little different than what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing where the market's going as opposed to where it is right now, but even where it is right now, in an iWatch world, they're going to be scrolling this stuff, looking at it on a Windows or Google Glass while they're waiting for a bus. And I'm saying, so what you want to do is, is gamify this. And when you come to our program, there's two elements, you know, the bottom of the hourglass and the top. So the top is developing the business, developing the IP, developing the creative, all of those aspects. The bottom is developing the capital. And so we put you through a program of 3 days that, when I say this, a former SEC prosecutor who's now in private practice says this is what he needed to build his security law practice. And so the laws have changed in raising capital from the Jobs Act, and you hear a lot about crowdfunding, but I'm telling you that we are the leading lobby for small business in the Beltway, and we wrote most of that law, and we're on three SEC rulemaking committees, and we're in the Congress's space on the Jobs Act 2 law going through now, and we know this area, and we're ongoing education credits for the bar, and when I tell you that law firms all over the country, they don't understand this yet, because these laws are new. The big bulk of them were passed last year in December, and then a whole bunch of new rules are just coming in, and they still haven't done
crowdfunding. What is it relating to? Is it relating to crowdfunding or the next step beyond crowdfunding?
All private placement law. In which private placement law has been modified to make it much easier now for you to raise. Let me give you an example that is, you know, outside what you do in generally in law school. And I tell you this having been chairman of a publicly traded, you know, brokerage firm with thousands of stockbrokers operating in 14 countries. And I sold that when my dad got cancer and moved into his training business, which was large with clients in a lot of countries, and created in the 80s CO space out of that training business. And that's my two journeys, really, those two businesses. But as chairman of a, you know, large brokerage firm, I know this space when I give you some guidance, and I'm suggesting you consider this as the, not the final word, at our program would be Marlone Pause. And Marlone is the senior security law partner for Locke & Lord. And he works under a man named, and you can look him up, is Raul, R-O-E-L, Campos, C-A-M-P-O-S. And he was the lead SEC commissioner for two terms under George Bush. Four of the existing commissioners had their jobs influenced by Raul in one way or another, and are very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
He sits, he's chairman of President Obama's Committee on Economic Terrorism. And that's the advisory committee for sanctions on Putin, sanctions on Iran, economic policy in these matters. And so he's burdened with a lot of public service work there. But he's also influential. He meets a lot of the heads of state before the president. And so he's really, really at the top of his game. Marlone Pause, P-A-Z, ran the SEC during the financial crisis. He was the deputy director of trading. So the appointed chairwoman was Mary Shapiro during that time. Now it's Mary Jo. And under Mary Shapiro, when the meetings were occurring regarding the first parts of it, you know, Bear Stearns and then later Lehman and AIG and the banks and all of that, that was Bernanke of Treasury in the side room, Paulson from the Cabinet, Geithner from the Treasury, and Marlone Paws from the SEC, all 100 silos reporting to him. And he's recently joined Locke and Lord, become familiar with their five-year commitment to us as the leading voice in small business. The firm is committed that small business will one day become big business. And we have got them to discount the private placement fee. So to do an excellent book at their level is, you know, $50,000 to $70,000. They'll do a private placement for $15,000 in 8 weeks for one of our clients. Now, when you're a lawyer, you know, you can talk to them and say, if I do the basic work, what would you do to oversight them? And it just depends, because at 15, they're already at their, you know, they got legal exposure with all those investors,
yeah,
if their name's on it or anything else. And so I'm not sure when you raise money if it wouldn't be desirable, because we can show you how to get a bridge backing to get $75,000 or so in, where you could pay them and give yourself cushion for income purposes, because we want you paid from your new company. So when you develop this, remember I gave you the hourglass, the bottom is raising mm-hmm. capital, and that's a full-time yeah. job. The goal is not to start the company, not to do the fun stuff, not to develop it, to have a business plan that you could write in your sleep. And I'm going to come back to this gamification idea that I want to give you, but let me first give you the budget so you can do it, all right?
Yeah.
So take a pie chart and just put a big pie on a piece of paper. And at the top, put 10 million shares C Corp. Because this company is going to be really big, and you're either going to sell it or go public. And either way, you want it to look like that now. So 10 million shares C Corp. And put 20% at the bottom as a pie wedge for founding investor round. And put in the circle 80% equal me. So, you know, once a year you have a shareholder meeting, you elect your board and say goodbye to your shareholders. They'll never show up anyway. And then that's it. And the money that's going to come in is permanent money. It's not debt. This money is used in which your job is to grow the shareholder value and to grow the share price. And so that's a permanent infusion of capital into the company. You don't share profits. Profits are reinvested in growth. And you want to put in your offering that the company doesn't expect to pay dividends for 60 months, and that dividends will, you know, profits are going to be reinvested in growth until the income overcomes the cost of growth. And so income does not overcome the cost of growth when you're hyper-growing for 5 years anyway. So the concept that growing income will overcome the cost of growth is not true. You really need capital for quite an extended period before the income overcomes the... Because as you're growing, the cost is always exponentially growing.
Yes.
And it's a little bit less with the online basis that we're talking about, but the staggering cost is not the... you know, when we go 2 years on this, we have constant IT development for the IP and new versions, and then we have a customer service group to explain its use. And our brand will be defined by our customer service group, which I'm suggesting should be a cubicle of paralegals that are in a little university class that you put together and train them so that they're giving the service to the consumers that's just the way you want it on the use of the program, you know. So, but now let's look at the bottom of that and put 2 million shares underneath that circle, and then put 100 blocks of stock at $25,000 a block, $25,000 a block, at $1.25 a share for founders, raising $2.5 million. And that covers your staff, your office, your product development, your branding, and your marketing. Now, once we get going and there's a lot of revenue, we will need another round. That we could probably get 15% of the company sold for $15 million on the second round because of the EBITDA income and the developed IP. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
So, and that second round is easy. The Locke & Lord firm is the largest firm in hedge fund and private equities in the world. Their clients have enormous resources under management, and they can bring in private equity firms. In fact, they have quite a little stable of them along the eastern seaboard there in this $1 to $5 million range, as well as the big ranges. But to do a $15 million offering, they could do that with 10 of their private equity customers. So once you get your $2.5 million, you may pay them a fairly big number for a pitch book to get $15 million. You know, $75,000 or something, and they do a pitch book, and then they introduce us because they did diligence and did the pitch book to their clients that they know are looking for these kind of IT properties. Now, there's a man who's leading... There's a lot of good people in it. He's just one of the good people. They're all young, but he's leading in this game space. And he's building the largest amusement park, one of them, in the new market coming up in Florida called Game Nation USA, where he's developing the funding, and he's got land and partners and game companies behind it, in which the games that all the kids are playing will become rides. And
wow.
You'll go on those rides. And that is going to take a lot of market share away from a 53-year-old mouse. You know, 1953 mouse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how he competes. All these games where, you know, my kids are playing like Minecraft. And they'll go to the amusement park where Minecraft is a game, a ride that you go into. They'll love that. And
yeah,
once it's advertised, yeah, they'll make mommy and daddy go there. So he's got a great idea there, but he's got all these people in the game world. What I'm suggesting you do with Rook, because it's going to be cheap, and we don't pay him anything, we just get a quote. What would it cost to gamify this? So you go into the legal games, and we call the product, it's Legal Boom, but the product's called the Legal Game. And you start the legal game, like the page opens, and there's all this magical crap going on. It ends up with a thing coming forward that says, the legal game. Click here. And you click. And then it talks about, like you're talking about, questions. Are you a small business, a mid-sized business, a larger business? And, you know, just different needs and criteria. Menus get larger. And they keep self-qualifying. And then they walk through their educational components, which can all be animation. And your voiceover. And then it's forever. And we make an avatar where it's you, just the way you want to look, animated. But you never grow old, you never change, your voice is always the same, and it's always you. And that's the product, you know, and you're the voice of Legal Boom and the legal games. And we trademark those assets. And now it's gamified, and it's fun. And you can play it on an iPad and an iPhone, on an iWatch, and get your legal stuff done whenever you're waiting at the dentist's office or whatever, and save so much time and money. And if you're an entrepreneur, you use Legal Boom, and we show you how to do things as opposed to Legal Zoom, which is basically just forms and do it yourself. So it's great for mom and pa at home, but we need to have entrepreneurs use Legal Boom. We're the anti-Zoom. And I just gave you IP that's worth a lot of money for trademark packaging.
You really did. I don't know Legal Boom.
But well, we can change that. That's a working thing.
But the concept of, hey, if you're an individual, go to LegalZoom. If you're an entrepreneur, come to ours. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you could take a more serious approach and just make it the entrepreneur legal game. And come play the game, and you'll find out what your needs are. And you'll know how to solve them. And, you know, a lot of them in there will say, do not execute a final document here without a lawyer's review and help.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's, I think there's a caveats we'll put in and all of that. But, you know, and we can also have a site that's a listing site where lawyers can, for $25 a quarter, list, and it puts them in their state. So it's Root can make a game where they go to the... lawyer list in the city with you, and it goes to a map, and the map zooms in to your city, and then you click your city, and it shows the lawyers that are in the legal game listed. And so you're basically, you know, with 1,000 lawyers at 25 a quarter, got another revenue source. And the 25 is, you know, just a holding place number. Maybe it's 125 a quarter, but it's, you know, $125,000 per thousand is pretty good. You know, and why wouldn't the lawyer pay that as a listing fee if you're supplying an Evernest list of leads? And then the lawyers have their own map that they go to list in their city. It's gamified for everybody, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think you'd have a lot of fun creating that. And I think that digital product, everybody wants to get away from binders, loads of paper, or anything like that. And so static websites that aren't fun, what everybody wants now is short. 3 minutes on any piece of information. No
Isn't
10 minutes, no 10.
That's just so...
I don't like it either, but they won't
so frustrating, I know.
Minutes. Well, here's what I'm thinking of doing is...
you break it up in series, I guess.
Well, no, in the budget, I got another little game plan going for you. Put a pyramid on a piece of paper.
Okay.
And put at the top a radio. And due diligence, I want you to look at EMSI Tampa. Just Google search EMSI Tampa.
EMSI Tampa?
Yeah, and Marcia Friedman is the president. You can phone her, use my name, and just explore with her what you're talking about doing. Then put at the bottom, publishing. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the right, put... super site. Now, I want you to imagine that you've got a radio show that is up in 8-6-420. That's just budget. And you've got a full-time producer getting guest stars and lining you up. You just walk in and, you know, do your show. And you can do it, I mean, in your office that you'll have in the future. You just have to pay for the broadcast. It's real cheap to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're broadcasting on real live towers, and, you know, it's your show. And then at the bottom is your book and a series. It's a best-selling book series. And then at the right is the super site. When you come in the super site, you get the information section as a paid member. So we're saying, here's our stuff that's free, and for this amount, you can be in our super site. And your silver at $49 a month. Month to month, no contract. On a 2-year contract, your gold at $29 a month. On a 3-year contract, your platinum at $9 a month. And they get 100 videos of you. You've got, you know, a couple interns from the university in video that are just the latest grading, you know, video guys. And they are working for $10 an hour and shooting you on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday after your radio show, and then cutting it into shorts and putting those up. So an hour may become 10 short films. And now you've got these short films on various aspects of topics that you want to educate them to. And they have your blog, your newsletter, a magazine, a discount on all the products in the mall, and you've got kits and toolboxes and just like you imagined, all that's in the mall. And they pick those up. But it's fed because your syndicator is growing the 20 stations EMSI Tampa brought you. Tampa does three things. First, they will build out your radio show to launch on different locations and cities you choose. And they can get, 10 or 20 radio stations at the launch date, in eight of the weeks to 12 weeks. Your book should come out then. Now, remember, capital's paying for this. We raise the money. We're paying them to do the radio show. We're hiring staff to syndicate the show so it grows faster. And we're also hiring ad salespeople full-time to sell ads on the station. But the ads are built based on the audience. And so we want billboards to go up in the markets that the radio show is going up on. And we want those billboards to be up right at the point that the radio show comes on, telling people to go to the radio show and buy the book right when the book releases. So the radio show drives book sales. So Marcia put the radio shows up. Second, Marcia is 25 years as one of the top firms launching authors. She gets you on multiple radio and television shows every single day for 90 days or 120 days on a campaign. In other words, she engineers and gives you a quote for a national book launch campaign, which you can do all from your house with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your television shows are mostly Skype and all the radio is just on the phone. And so you're talking about your book and doing your stuff and it's driving book sales, but it's driving people to your radio show. The radio show drives book sales and the website. And as that show over 2 or 3 years grows out, because we've got all that now where it's really coming in, everybody comes into the radio show through the super site. Everybody comes in for book sales through the super site. And they're all seeing the platinum at $9. Now imagine that we're 3 years down the road. You're making about $2.5 million a year from your radio. Your legal stuff that you've gamified is making fortunes, just fortunes. And your $9 a month, let's say we have 1 million people around the country and the world, in entrepreneur world, that just want to get all these details. All outside the country, they're starving for this. And now they can get this through your blogs, your magazine, your newsletters. You've got an actual, you know, for want of a better word right now, Legal Boom magazine. And I see Legal Boom as your business is booming when your legal is making sure that you're not zooming. So we didn't say anything about Legal Zoom, but we're killing them. And if you make mistakes in law, it can take most of your life, bankrupt your company, cost you fortunes in time and money, all because you didn't have a dime to protect yourself from the $100 that's crushing you. And Legal Boom, we make sure you are armored and you know how to do it, not just what to do. It's the difference. We have the toolkit, and your business will be booming because when you're with Legal Boom, we make sure. And you can have a lot of fun. I don't want to go to where we get a liability, but you get the direction. And you're on radio with this every day. And they're going, here she is now. She wrote the bestseller, Legal Boom. She has the series out for Legal Boom for entrepreneurs, Legal Boom for single mom entrepreneurs, Legal Boom for couple entrepreneurs, Legal Boom for teen entrepreneurs. I mean, it's just endless. And we pay ghostwriters. They come tape record you. And once the game is developed, you'll be ready for that. And then they tape record you. And from the development of the game work, it really gets concise how the book will be and the chapters have been outlined by you. And you speak them. And so you write from your own outline, speak them, and then they write the book in 4 weeks and it's done. And after you've edited it and everything else, say 2 months go by and we get another book done. You know, Legal Zoom for single moms, entrepreneurs. And we just keep going with that. And you can see, I mean, you're a celebrity status. You wanted to speak everywhere. And you predicted and controlled the market. Now, when the money's raised, the first $300,000 or so goes in the bank account. Now, honey, look at that little chart I gave you and think, and I say this not placatingly to you, but, you know, because we really help powerful lady leaders. This is what we stand for. Half our program are women that we're empowering. And when you look at that chart, most people are going to buy 3 of those blocks. They're not going to buy 1 block. If you understood the business plan I just said, why wouldn't you want as many $1.25 shares as you can get?
Yes.
So at our place, you're sitting next to some very, very wealthy people. I mean, not all of them, but a percent of them. And lots of investment is done there. I'll give you a film that's called Show Me the Money. And they'll send it to you, but you can click CEO space, show me the money. And then in your space, I want you to see 3 films.
Okay.
And you can just put CEO space in front, and the films will come right up. Or you can have our people will send you the link, and you can just ask them, you know, will you send me the link? But I want you to see, and always put CEO space if you're Googling, Dr. David Gruder. You'll licensed professional. He's a clinical psychologist. He wrote the book, The New IQ, Integrity. And he teaches integrity management from American Express to Zellerbach. And I would like you to, he's a TED speaker. I think he'd be good on your board. That's why I'm having him, you know, his look at the film. Then I want you to see Dennis Wong. Dennis Wong. And they're both going to be teaching in this week coming up in March, okay? And so Dennis Wong is a lawyer in San Francisco. He teaches entrepreneurialism at USF, in the university. He is specialized in credit unions and bank formation and those regulations. And I think he should be on the board. I think he is particularly wonderful. I think he would bring us the Asian market, which I think would be really good. I think having the integrity guy on your board is really good. And it'll help with investors. Their resumes are really substantial. And then I want you to see Sharon Lecter, L-E-C-H-T-E-R. And she wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is 500 million copies with Robert Kiyosaki. She invented the cash flow game. She's on the President's Council for Economic Literacy for Our Children. Creating the game, that's what she's done and made 100 million.
Wow.
So she would like this, and she's the first female partner at Doolittle. She knows this part. Now, she wrote Outwitting the Devil, which is another bestseller all over the world right now. She wrote Think and Grow Rich for Women. She has 5 million when she clicks enter in her database, and a lot of them are really wealthy. And she's a CPA. And I just think as a powerful woman that's got such name recognition and is already very famous, and you can tell her, you know, be on my board and I'll fan your brand. I'll give you so much out of this. And down the road, I'll pay you a consulting fee for life or whatever you want. Just help me at the stage of building it. Let me use your reputation and I'll take care of you on the other side when the wealth is coming up. And she'll trust that. That will work. And you guys will put together some real agreements. I mean, she'll want you, you know, we don't hug each other and say, great, we get terms and conditions and make a document that you're comfortable with and she's comfortable with. And you guys will be great partners. And so see her film, because her film is a little different. The other two are licensed professionals like you, basically saying you can trust this place and you'll make a lot of money with it.
Mm-hmm.
And giving you a lot of what we do. Now, Sharon is a CPA girl, and so she goes behind the hood a little and gives you how we do it. What is the processes and actual methods that are going to work on doing it? And think first, and I know it's disingenuous to put this first, but think first about just legal customers. Because when you come through this, the first time, you need to come through a little longer journey. And so the weekend before it starts is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 20th. And I need you to take a flight in the morning on a direct flight to Vegas and then take a nap or get a facial and massage and be by the pool of the 85 and just gorgeous and just relax, get your blood sugar up. And then in the afternoon, we're going to start a very, you know, I've got a lot of people with different sophistications, so we start a little bit basic, but we get into all the current law and not just how to construct and do capital offerings and how to raise the money. We practice you. We tell you what you can say to investors, what you can't, how to approach investors. It's so different than how you would. And you get so many more out of every 10. Like if you went to 10 investors, packaging up what I gave you and making it splendid,
yeah,
you get two out of 10. After my capital offering, we'll get 8 out of 10. And the reason is that my capital offering is going to train you. And you're just the perfect student for this because of your legal training, your background. You're just like the best clay I could get. But, you know, the average person with their capital need is talking about their dolphin, how they love their dolphin. And the investor doesn't give a shit about the dolphin. The investor doesn't care. But the investor cares about how the $1.25 a share might grow to 50. And what are the milestones that will grow it? So if you spend your time with investors talking about the journey of their money, and you do it in a way that you are guaranteeing or assuring outcome, which is illegal, and not diminishing absolute risk. You know, you're telling them when the presentation begins. You know, before I start, Frank, I've got to tell you, in any venture investing, you can make the highest return possible. There's nothing that can make greater return. But there, it's fraud if anyone ever tells you it's safe. You can lose part or all of your money when you venture invest. And if you look in the eyes of someone and they tell you the risk is gone, don't invest with them. It's illegal. It violates state and federal law. I'm an attorney. And I want you to know you can lose all your money when you invest in these things. You can make a loss, but you can lose it too. And I want you clear on that, and we covered that because it's in all the documents, but yeah. I don't ever belittle that. And when I look at you coming in, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions to make sure that part of my money, that, or part of your money I take in, is not imprudent. The federal government wants as a yardstick that I don't take more than 10% of your income. So if you make $350,000, I can't take more than $35,000, or 10% of your net worth. So if you're worth $10 million, I could take $1 million in. But that might be a little high in one venture area. You know, if you're going to put $1 million in high-risk ventures, maybe you ought to put $100,000 in 10 different industries, you know, just to hedge your bet. But I'm certainly happy to take $100,000. Well, they want to put more in right now because you're so prudent and you're talking their language. Do you see the difference?
I do see the difference.
And so we train you for 3 days on that. We rehearse you, so it's in you. If I lecture to you, you'll never get it. If you start doing it and speaking it and putting it out, you got it. I mean, that's why law is a practice. I mean, you can learn all you want, and you graduate out, and you're just starting your lesson, really, because you learn out where you are in the field. And that's where you grow. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, and your competency is... begins to rise as you, just what you did. I mean, I can't praise you enough for helping a person made a mistake to go from a $600,000 claim to a $40,000 settlement. I mean, it's just, you did such a job for that client, and I'm sure they will never appreciate what you did.
No.
I mean, they won't, yeah. They probably feel they paid you too much for it.
Oh, yeah.
But the money I paid her, I should have got this wiped out. And it's like, that's how they feel, and they don't realize. I mean, they're a whisper away from having a defined judgment and 10-year paying out on this thing. Yeah. I mean, they just don't even realize what it would have done if they attached their house and tried to really force an involuntary bankruptcy and so forth, which they could do. And they don't understand that.
You explain to them, they're just, how can these people sue? How can this person sue me? Like, well,
you know what, they really, the clients, you almost have to turn it off because, well, you have to say, look, another thing lawyers have to say is, look, when we talk about the legal problems and then we talk about solving them, that's a billable moment. Now, when you talk to me as a friend and you need some time to just tell me how this makes you feel because you feel it's so unfair, but I want you to know, I have to bill you while we're doing therapy. So do you really want me to be the therapist? You know, where you're telling me, because who cares how you feel? I mean, at the end of the day, we got to do the legal stuff. And I'm just telling you, you'll talk to lawyers. This will help you the rest of your life with lawyers. And when you're talking all the time, telling them what happened, you just want to vent. That costs money. They have to charge you for the vent. And it doesn't help your legal matters. So try and frame data to us that is useful for the case. And just remember, both you and I know that Mandela shouldn't have gone to prison. Gandhi went to prison 7 times for treason. St. Paul went to prison over and over. These guys shouldn't have been in prison. But lots of people go to prison that shouldn't have been in prison. You're in legal prison right now. You've got a challenge. It's unfair. Unfairness happens all the time. It's part of being in business, part of being out there. And you've got to allow for it and have budgets for it. And if you didn't, you will in the future. But I'm going to do a great job, and I'm going to be professional for you, and I'm going to give you the biggest law service, like you were hiring the biggest law firm, and you'll pay Walmart prices because they're $1,500 an hour. Which they are, as you well know. I think Marlon's billing rate, if you're getting him just on partner time, is like $1,400 an hour.
Where are they located? New York or
well, they're all over the world. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're in California. They're in New York. Their headquarters are Washington D.C. Look up Lock and Lord. You'll see nice things about them. But we're using them now because of the White House connections, the influence, and they happen to be particularly prevalent in the financial space, hedge funds, private equities, and so forth. And we need that for some of these projects, like the amusement parks and so forth. And we need that level of law and that level of access to capital. So we try and associate with, you know, I mean, to develop the relationship there took half a decade. You know, their due diligence on us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a.
Well, they're right here in West Palm Beach.
Yeah. Also, I forgot that. That's right. They have a very wealthy clientele down there, by the way,
as you
would expect. And they're superior when you need to step up for something. It's like, you know, you're front end for a client, and they need something that you need a firm for. They're really good. And you can negotiate prices with them. I mean, they really will do flat rate pricing on almost anything. They're very entrepreneurial. We've looked through these firms, and the big firms don't understand entrepreneurialism. And admittedly, they got a lot of lawyers. These are, you know, we're up in the thousands here, but they educate their core partners well on entrepreneurialism. And I have the IP guy. He's written one of the best-selling books in the IP space, Deans, coming from the LA office to teach IP protection. And so that's going to be
What was his book, IP Space?
No, I'll get it for you. I don't even have the name on the top of my head, but it's been a national bestseller in just especially in online protection and the new...
Yeah.
Rules that are applying to everything digital and electronic, which people are just not. I mean, when you sell these companies today, it's all IP.
It's
not EBITDA like it used to be. The EBITDA could be like WhatApp was making $20 million. That was the gross revenue. That wasn't EBITDA. And they sold that firm for $19 billion. What created the valuation? Well, the user base at 5 million users and 1 million a month coming off. So Facebook saw what they could do with that velocity. And then the IP that they had in their products that wasn't fully developed that they saw they could get. When they bought Beats, they bought it to get Steve Jobs back. They needed those two genius partners that were ergonomic designers that electronics out of the park. And they bought it because they have some technologies that were about to release that would have disrupted Apple. Now they are Apple products coming out. Do you see how smart that move was? And they got the geniuses in the company. They just rehired for 20 years Steve Jobs for Creative Next coming out. And they're all so excited. That was a very big move. I just thought, you know, Tim and his team have done culturally and when you're at that level and everybody's shooting at you, stay, you know, when I was talking to Steve when he was alive, and I said, you got the hardest job in the world. And they said, what's that? And I said, you built the Argonaut. You built the Rolls Royce. You built the thing no one had ever seen before. Nothing like it. Culturally, dynamically, leading the market. You got it all. You're dying, but you got it all. And I said, and he goes, so what's the hardest job? And I said, Steve, God's taking you out, so you'll do it. And he goes, what is it? It's what you can't do, Steve. And he goes, what is it? He would have been 60 tomorrow. He goes, what is it? And believe me, not everybody knows Steve Jobs' birthday. I said, it's staying there, Steve. How do you frickin' stay there so you don't wobble off the top at all? You have to just constantly reinvent this, but you have to culturalize that it never changes in the culture. And I said, what you've built, I want you to know, when you step out, you're going to be bigger than when you were here. You're going to be a legend beyond legend. And they're going to do it for you. For 10 to 15 years, you watch. And I said, you just watch what happens. And he got a lot of peace out of that because at the end, he got that. He got that was true. He saw it in his speeches and some of the things he was making at the end. He was really bad and peace on all that. Because letting go of Apple, I think, was harder than letting go of his life.
Yeah, that came through in some of his speeches about it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because it was such a... well, he was into, surprisingly not self-aggrandizing, I mean, he was into benefits to the world. And he was into... He says competition was, we have no competition. The only competition we have is ourselves. We didn't do a good enough job for our customers. How can we next time? What can we do to do better for our clients? And he was ruthless about that. I mean, you know, he'd blow up and do all the stuff, but it was always on excellence. And his level of it was like Disney. I mean, those guys, you just don't get them. I mean, they're who they are for a reason, and they have qualities that are, you know, there are lots of inventors in Edison's group, but seeing through all that noise to get to the final ones was Edison himself. And it's just, those are moments. I mean, if Edison wasn't who he was, he wouldn't hire Tesla.
What is... You gave so much incredible ideas and information. What is the next step? Put it all, the first step, put it in a nice business plan?
Well,
and incorporate
yeah,
what projected milestones should be?
Yeah, what you do is you put on one side of the piece of paper, whatever name we're going to end up with, but for now, mm-hmm. Let's say it's legalboom.com, and you put... you know, whatever name that you'll come up with an inspired name. And
yeah.
But the name is powerful, and we need that. We need your title as chairwoman founder, and we need your regular legal card. So on the other side, both sides have, one side has your picture, and I'd make that the legal side. And it's got your credentials in the paragraph. It's got the scope and services of the law firm in bullet points, contracts, licenses, leases, all the basic stuff. Incorporate whatever you want, you know, just all the different things you do. And so that's a bullet point paragraph. And then under that, it says entrepreneur profile, seeking small business owners who are rapidly growing, who want to engage with a law firm that understands entrepreneur law and wants to care for you as if you were blood family. It's not a relationship where you're retaining a law firm. It's a relationship where you're bringing in a sister who is going to defend your business for maximum valuation all along its curve and keep the hornets and the white sharks out of your space. Hornets and white sharks. And then say, at the bottom, say, give me a CME card for legal needs that you may have, and let's explore the relationship. And, you know, you put that on that side. Then the other side is the entire framework we just did. It's written up like that. You know, it's a billion-dollar company created on IP value to gamify, going to a level LegalZoom has never touched on how to do these things as the entrepreneur's LegalZoom website. And we call it this, and it'll be the website for entrepreneurs. And it will differentiate that if you're an individual, go to LegalZoom. If you're an entrepreneur, go to this site. And it'll include the following profit centers. Radio, publishing, a super site, products, seminars, workshops, and various toolkits that we are offering to the entrepreneur. And legal referral services in all their states. And we will be the super site for the world for entrepreneur law. In every nation when we're done. We intend to take it book, but we may sell it before we get there. And that's how I did it. And I'd ramp it up like that. Now, Jeff Flam was the... He's teaching at the class, but he ramped up. He's another one that... I just don't know if he'd go on your board. Because of his duties. I mean, you could say, would you be on my board, but if you can't, would you just advise me and mentor me? And even at the five classes, Jeff. And he built up a company that digitized, like you're trying to do, the complexity of health benefits in a large fortune company and all the claims management.
Yeah.
And he had 120 of number one fortune company down to 120 when he sold ADP for $370 million. And he owns the number one office park in Utah. He owns a resort. He's building a resort in Hawaii right now. He's got a new app that is, you should have him demo it for you, but it changes your mental acumen. And it's the next generation of mind-brain gym workout. And he's tested it with 6 million beta users in Asia. And he's, in 120 days or less, they increase typing skills by double and reading skills by triple. Memory and cognitive skills go off the chart. And they don't go backwards either. It's really a phenomenal brain tool. And so I think he has a breakthrough. He's got 10 million in that. He looks at that as his next billion-dollar play. But he's at our place because, you know, it's a lot of time for him to commit to just be there for a week to help others. But he's truly committed to the mentorship that we do for entrepreneurs. And we ask people like Jeff to tithe religiously 15% of their lifetime back to developing entrepreneurs. We say, look, you've learned, and now you have to return. And so, you know, he has a fabulous circle. I always tell people on faculty, don't feel any obligation to invest. When you come five times a year, you can't have everybody on you because you got money. People don't realize, people at like Jeff's level, their money's allocated. They're not investing endless amounts in high-risk ventures. They're not in the venture space investing at all. But they're fabulous mentors. And occasionally they will invest. I mean, you know, Jeff invests $50,000 or $100,000 in this. It's parking meter money for him. And he can see how it would grow and become worth a lot. But I'm not looking at him. I want him to be on your board and bring his circle in. His circle could fund the whole offering. And so, you know, just first you form a relationship when you meet him. But if I hadn't mentioned him, and the reason is he, like Rook, would be very, and in fact, you know, between you and Rook, Rook can gamify it, but you may have personality issues where you don't want to work with him. And Jeff can gamify it, too. And Jeff has taken very complicated admin issues and made them into a huge company. So that's his gift. That's what he knows how to do. And that's what you need. And he knows this space legally, knows it well. So I just think the guy's done a big M&A, you know, on the legal he's been through. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, so he's worked with, you know, the stuff we see in movies. And he's so nice and so high. And my people are the sweetest, most nice integrity people. But this is not a seminar, you know, so you're clear. We build businesses. We're a business building machine. And you come to this to come, you know, it's designed for continuous use. The business evolves. When you're through 1 week of these, we save 3 years of your development time. When you kick it, let's put it in more clear terms. If you weren't a lawyer trained, I mean, if you were, you know, an entrepreneur that hadn't finished college, you could come to this place, go through this capital class, and by the summer be on salary in your own company. You don't care if you ever got another legal client in your life. And if you don't come, you won't. That's not going to happen. You're not going to be there. So when you get there, when you design your business plan, get with Paul Hoyt, because he takes those business plans to investment banking grade and at least have him look at it, plus it, ask what he'd improve. So he's just fabulous, and his plans get tons of money raised. So he's good. Now, I have a better financial writer than he is, because this is a pretty big project. And his name is Neil Dabney. And he used to work with, he worked with Milliken for years at Drexel. And he's one of the few he's my grade. You know, he's an older man, he's 70. But he's the best financial writer. And, I mean, he knows, as chairman of a major investment house, I don't praise someone as high as I praise Neil's work. And he'll show you, he's one example, but he's He's just unbelievably brilliant. Even the due diligence of going through, putting it together, he makes it so investors will fall down the rut to buy this. Now, we don't need him yet. Your business plan would raise $2.5 million. Paul's would raise $15 million, but Neil's would be better for the hedge fund and private equity round. And so maybe what we do is raise $2.5 million off your plan, and then Paul pluses it in any way that we need. And you're raising money for the first period. You're not developing the company. We need you to have the discipline not to spend. This is the secret of everything. And having that money. If we didn't have CL Space, we'd need $5.5 million just to start. But CL Space will save a lot of it.
The discipline of what?
The discipline of not spending, of building your cash balance sheet for your company.
Yes.
Because once we start spending, the costs just keep rising.
Yes.
And we're in a race. Once we stop raising money and start spending, we're in a race to get income to replace what we're taking away from the money. And it may well be that that whole round is spent in fully developing out the product, and the income's coming in. And what I did that shortened everything is, see, I look at this product as coming in phases and stages.
Mm-hmm.
So phase one is a basic product. Phase two is a more advanced product. And phase three is much more advanced. And so what we do is we take 18 months and we have a budget. What are the things most people use and that are least costly for development costs? And we put those in the phase one 18-month bucket to profit center. It takes 18 months to develop those. More complicated things that we want them to use are phase two, and they're 24 to 36 months for development. And then the final things that are the most complicated, going public, merger acquisition, things like that go into phase three, which are 60 months in development. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And so you can have a toolkit for going public down the road, but let's wait 60 months to get it fully developed, because as you develop phase one and the basic things you're thinking about, it'll give you, you'll take a lot of the tools out of the box and say, let's put those in the 2-year box, or let's put those in the 5-year box. I say 3-year box and 5-year box. Because to do software well and to really make it just flawless, you've got to develop it, then beta test it, and then redevelop it, and then release it. And then you've got to support it. When it's out, it never is ending. You're always improving. Customers come back and say, I wish it did this, I wish it did that. And you've got to pick that up, have the supersite collect that. What's your feedback with it? What can we do better for you? You want a lot of interactive like that. And you want a social presence,
mm-hmm.
you know, on LinkedIn and Facebook.
Absolutely.
And that. By the way, Marcia Friedman, the third thing she does at EMSI Tampa, she'll do all of your social. You know, when we have money and we're starting and launching and the income's starting, I just have Marcia do all the social. Ken creates social storms, but Marcia does every time you appear in a radio show. And her people are getting you on 3-4 times a day when the book comes out. Then she gets that on 21 platforms online. You're in Facebook, things you never heard about. You're on LinkedIn. You're on every platform, Twitter, everything is getting that you are just on radio, just on television again, your book and your radio show. And it really creates buzz for the radio show. And that gives us sponsor dollars, ad dollars. Celebritizes you, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another thing that I think you might want to think about, why don't you employ all women? Make this a company that takes glass ceilings off and is a powerful lady leader that is giving opportunity, advancement, and careers to great lady leaders.
That's something to think about.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if you want to do that, but I mean, we need people that are growing big companies like this to stop talking about equal pay for women and actually, I hate to use the F word, but do it so that we can get a couple models built where the great companies are lady leaders like Meg, but they're building women opportunities across the silos of the divisions as they grow them. So this is, you know, this takes a little development money no matter how you do it. And I'll tell you, if you did it your way and you did a limp along toolkit, started on the internet,
Yes.
In three years, you probably make $100,000, $150,000 a year. And I'm just telling you, you're too talented for that. This is a company that will make you wealthy. You'll make plenty of money, and you won't need your law practice. Do you love practicing law, or if you're paid well enough from the company, you'd be okay with running this?
No, I'm more excited about this than practicing law.
Okay, because, well,
practice law for long enough.
Well, how long have you done it?
17 years.
Well, that's a long time. Have you been on your own the whole time?
No. I've just been on my own for 3 years. I was with firms before.
Okay. Well, both are just terrible. So were you a partner or not?
No, I was not a partner.
No, but how large was the firm?
I moved physically around, so I had to move firms around. But the large firm I worked for was 34 partners or 34 attorneys. Then
okay.
The last firm that I was with, it was essentially quite a nice balance. It was 12 attorneys, but all the partners came from large firms, and I was almost burnt out before I went to there, but everyone was so excited and passionate about the law. And
I'm so glad you got that. I'm so glad you got that experience, because
yes.
they're very rare. I mean, it's one
very,
of 100.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Normally, everybody's experience that I talk to, I mean, lawyers, I mean, I'll tell you who I see that really loves it is, well, I don't know, a lot of our people love it, but I'll tell you, I just find it to be,
it's draining.
It's been toxic, the environment. The culture,
that's the word,
community.
It is.
Yeah, if the internal culture could be different, almost like you're talking about, you could get a better equation, but the truth is, the handwriting is where it is, and everything is going digital. And I'll tell you what it reminds me of. There was a day where $150 an hour was what a programmer gets. And today, they're really having trouble getting much more than $11.
Going the same way? I mean,
well,
it's not quite.
Well, law is becoming a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine is a commodity. And I don't think either should be, by the way. I think that we need to get back to the respect and reverence for that kind of training and education and the value that's really in social contract. I mean, I think that, you know, society has a future because of the rule of law and because of the nature of social advocates. You know, we do a lot of disingenuous work to socially advocate, but it's you know, when you're in the Beltway, it really gets frustrating, you know, and not because, you know, everybody thinks they're a bunch of lying scoundrels and all that, and, you know, around the country, et cetera, but you go in there, and these guys, like, say, Orrin Hatch is 72, he's working 100 hours a week himself.
Yeah.
His staff is working. They don't get overtime or anything. He just gets a fast salary. God, he'd make fortunes if he just stopped, and he really cares and wants to do socially good things, and you know, you push in, like my worst enemy on the job back that just don't understand entrepreneurial issues, in Arkansas, for instance. I mean, we'll sit down and talk, and he has damn good points. I mean, and so that modifies my position because I feel he's wrong, and it's going to hurt entrepreneurs, but I can understand his point. You know, it's difficult. Public policy is complicated. You push in on one thing and it affects something else. There are unintended consequences.
It is. That's what one of the things that frustrates me is how people try to oversimplify things. And the I don't even know if you can call them the journalists. The journalists that try to give the snazzy response or the quick explanation. And not understanding this affects so many other different things. So everything's
well,
not
attitude simple. In America, I mean, we used to be a product of John Chancellor and Walter Cronkite. And we had senior statements of news departments that were truly independent. And we got news. You know, now we have to steer. Like, do we want conservative Fox? Do we want liberal MSNBC? Or what do we want? And then we can't choose that diet. We've got 27-year-olds who are telling us what the financial markets are going to do, and what the war in the Ukraine is about.
Yeah.
They don't have a clue what any of that is about.
Yeah. And you go to, like, even at a smaller level, so many, like, the business networking groups that I go to, you have these expert consultants. They look like they're about 10, maybe they're 29. I'm like, what do you know about running a business unless, there's so many of them. If it's the, if it's the outlier genius, that's one thing. But there's so many of them that are so young wanting to be consultants. And I just don't understand how you can do it at that age. How, you haven't even been tested yet yourself. How can you consult someone else?
Well, we tell people at our space, hire the mentors you cannot afford because you'll never grow past your mentor's income. So 90%+ of the advisors and coaches and mentors make less than $75,000 a year. The other 15% make under 150. If you get a mentor, like let's say, give me an example of one of your mentors. Well, Jeff McGee is a senior consultant for the Federal Reserve Board of the United States of America, the portrait of the chairwoman. And did under Bernanke as well. He's Mars manned project for the NASA for their management team that's doing it on strategy and, keeping the management team on focus. He represents a growing number of governors on emergency preparedness planning and is the FEMA interface officer for the states on emergency planning. And then he's represents 100 Fortune companies at the CEO level. He can't take a new client for 2.5 years. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and he's one of our faculty. They're all like that. The head guy that broke up Conoco into two companies, he's teaching there as the former senior partner for merger acquisitions for Arthur Young.
But the different people that you mentioned to be on the board, how likely is it that they would actually consider being on a board for a new company?
When you sit with them, you're going to sit with them at meals and eat with them. And you say, Bernie suggested that you might be exploring being on the board with me because it would be good for both our brands and our business, and I'll keep your time footprint way down. I'm only going to have quarterly board meetings by phone. You should be happy with that.
Yeah.
Their big deal is time. And then say, but I would like you to mentor me, if nothing else, at the CEO space events, and then could I have access to you in between? When you get a mentor and they're getting interested and they see what you're doing, because remember, the write-up should have a one-page summary, and then they can give them the business plan separate. And, you can go free business plan online and get 27 pages of template models for business plans.
Yeah.
And just pick a one you like and fill in the search and replace. It's really not bad. Because we just need a quick and dirty business plan. We don't need projections. We're raising the money to develop Price Waterhouse projections.
Okay.
That'll be the next level, $15 million for 15%. Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
And so really, you'll be fine. This is, you'll build a big company, and we'll do it in stages and phases. I don't want to overwhelm you, because this is so much in one night, but I don't have more in my canon. This is it. This is the framework of a business you can take public or resell for very big bucks. And I put in the elements where you can predict and control your growth. And the first stage is to get you 2 years of salary with your car payment, your Verizon bill, your laptop, your phone, and your basic cost, and your health care covered by the company on the 1st and 15th. So you're making $15,000 a month or whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? More or less, whatever.
Yeah.
And so you've got that covered. And you don't have to take a law client, but you can. You can still do the law practice, but you're winding it up, right? And so you're starting to say no to clients. You're taking only the interesting things that are more lucrative, and you're watching your time clock because you really don't want to go to law. You don't want to get trapped because you're making enough money from the company. And the investors that put up that first $500,000, those four, five, they're trusting that you will
focusing on the business.
That you'll work 70 hours a week raising the money. Their risk is you won't raise the $2.5 million. If you raise the $2.5 million, their risk goes way down. Because if you spend it as you go, I don't have a balance sheet that shows $2.2 million. If I can show a balance sheet of $2.2 million, I can do the pitch book and get the 15.
When do you start developing the products in the different phases at the same time?
The moment we get the balance sheet on the close. Once the CPA comes in and gives us the balance sheet that we've got $2.2 million in the bank, we've got a certified bank balance sheet, we go and pay Locke and Lord to do the $15 million offering, and we start spending the whole $2.5 million. Because you won't spend $1 million before the 15 is entirely funded. You know how long it takes to get the $15 million in? It takes 120 days. Because you have that balance.
$2.2 million even seems so, wow, a lot.
Does it seem large to you? Oh,
yes.
In our world, I want you to Google search the films I gave you, and one more, CEO Space, Show Me the Money. You're going to see a teacher in the middle school, that's 9-year-olds, for music. And he's being fired because they're taking out the music department. Right? And he came to CEO Space where he went through a program we have to learn how to get the money to go. He did not have a way to come, and there was no way he could pay to come. And he got the money to come, very nervous. In fact, just before he came, he asked for a refund. We have a money-back refund, but we gave him the refund. And then he showed up at the cashier's check. Like, you canceled, but I'm here anyway. So he goes through the program. He doesn't have an invention, but he gets one while he's there, an idea for it. Some engineers there go upstairs and do the CAD program and gave him the CAD work, and he got 16 patents for that. While he's talking to you on the film and Show Me the Money, he's just passed $9 million raised. He raised $1 million that week at the class itself, and his existing investors came in for another $1 million. He just passed $2 million more raised that week. He won the best new toy product in New York's Toy Fair, the Super Bowl of toy introductions for the world, 2 years in a row against Nintendo and Xbox and Microsoft and Disney for Piano Wizard and Guitar Wizard, still the leading toy education products for teaching children at young ages music. He's won so many awards off that. He'll be there in March. And that'll be like his 72nd forum. You know, so he's come a long way since that time. You'll see a guy in there who is a guitar player talking about an automotive product called Tow Truck in a Box. And at that time, he had raised $1.7 million. He's an 8th grade completion. He never went to high school. Music's his only thing. He never knew about business, didn't know how to raise money. But that film, shortly after that film, he raised another $5 million for a total of $6.5 million.
And then once they have that, are they bringing in revenue so that, or...
He went to 40,
I want to make sure that the investors are taken care of.
Well, here's what we did for him. Now, he used us continuously, like it's designed. So what did we have to do with him? We helped him get the patents on that project. We helped him get the manufacturer. It's a very difficult thing to make because it's extrusion mold aluminum. We brought him the largest plant with extrusion mold aluminum in China in the world. He's still using them. A million square feet under one roof, a million. And they made the product. We did the box, the packaging, and we brought him the automotive stores. When you say that, we brought him all of them. Then we brought him Walmart, Target. Then we brought him NASCAR, because he wanted to race NASCAR, and his cars won. And then he had the board populated by the head of Subway, head of Best Buy. He'll be there. He'll be standing up front telling you this whole story. Because he just completed, in December, which I read to the group, that's the punchline for your investor question, he ended up in 14 countries and 40,000 retail stores.
Wow.
And in December, he just completed with a huge national brand company a merger acquisition, in which he gets a royalty for life on the product. And everybody's happy, and investors are happy. And this is done by an eighth grade, you know, never finished high school or started. And he's a chairman guy now. But he says, my whole education is CEO Space. In my life, I know guitar, and I play with the biggest brands like Aerosmith, Clapton, et cetera. I mean, in his music business, he goes, well, it's winding down. I'm down to one role now. But he's still out packing stadiums and music.
Wow, very nice. Well, thank you for everything, all your input, and taking so much time with me tonight.
Yeah, when you see Show Me the Money, I want you to get in your mind. that people with 90%, not 80, less sophistication, training, and education than you do very well with this now procedurally. And I'm just saying, this is, get in your mind that I would raise $2.5 million today to launch a Pizza Hut on a corner so I have sustained marketing to get people to come to that over 2 years when the peak opening dropped off. And I built my regular customers. But the biggest cost is getting you, let's say you're my customer. You're an entrepreneur and I want to get you into our legal mode. Well, I've got to make 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 12 impressions over 9 months before I get you. And then you start coming because the brain triggers that you're familiar and you've been hearing about it and you should get into it. It's very challenging. You're going to get a lot more customers from your radio show and your books where people are living with you and having a relationship with you and then going to the website. And so I've given you prediction elements that we're missing that lower cost the brand marketing. Otherwise, these launches, you know what you have to spend to really build a super brand? You have to spend, the idea is that you go viral. Everybody thinks you go viral.
Yeah.
YouTube didn't go viral. They got a venture company with $127 million and dominated the market in 18 months. And they spent $50 million building that brand up. You've got to spend the money to build the brand, and that's the biggest cost. So the cost of everything is a bar graph that's about 2 inches off your page. The cost of branding and marketing over the same two-year period is off the paper. It's not even fittable on the paper. And so this $2.5 million is just the first thing. I mean, when we get through that, you will see, it'll be so clear to you how much more money you need, and it won't be hard to get at all. But can you appreciate, before I spend the money, of $2.2 million of other people's money, right, knowing what I know about development costs and what it's going to take to launch this and brand it and make it go global, before I start spending that $2.5 million, I want to make sure I replace every dollar with a second private placement that gives me my unstoppable money. Now remember, I said 15% for $15 million at that point. Are you with me?
15%. Are you seeing?
Yeah, the second offering, the product is showable. We've got the software developed. We've got the super site up.
I love the game. The game is a great idea.
The legal game. Yeah,
yeah.
The legal game. Mm-hmm. Or just the legal game, TM.
Mm-hmm. All the components.
But the entrepreneur legal game, if it's taken, it might be taken on a, do a trademark search and see if the legal game is taken. And if it is, check the entrepreneur legal game, which won't be, and then file one over the weekend. TM that. And just for the sake of it, you spend $9, go to GoDaddy and get LegalBoom.com. It may be taken, get LegalBoom USA. And LegalBoom USA will be not taken, and you'll be able to get it. Then the guy that bought it, just doing the derivative of LegalZoom, they're just holding it, hoping you'll buy it for $25,000. And we'll come back and buy it from them.
Your legal game's not taken. The only thing that showed up was your business legal team when the game is on the line. Someone's slogan.
Yeah, but who cares? You're talking about your trademark. Yeah, but remember when you go to get the URL, if you go try to get the legal game, it'll probably be taken by someone who's holding it, doing nothing with it, and they didn't trademark. So we'll get the trademark and tell them they can't use it. But what I want you to do is get the LegalGameUSA.com. Just put USA after it. We got the .com. And then we get get LegalBoom. We may change the name, but for $9, who cares? And get LegalBoomUSA.com if LegalBoom is taken. And you just put USA after it. And later, we'll go to other countries and we'll be... Yeah, but
the LegalGames, plural, is available. The legal game.
It's taken.
The legal game is taken. The legal game. The legalgames.com is available. Who owns it? The legal game. I don't need to spend your time as I'm searching for this.
But here's the problem. We'll get leakage. You know, people go to legal game instead of legal mm-hmm. games when we advertise it and say it. And I don't want the leakage. And so that site's for sale, I guarantee you. But you just put the legal game USA, and you'll get the .com. And then when we advertise, it goes legalgameusa.com. They don't forget that. You don't get leakage. And the same will happen when you go to Legal Boom. It'll be taken, then you go Legal Boom USA, and you get the .com. Then we control it. Those are tricks of these warehousers. Obama's trying to outlaw these troll companies. I mean, you know, the patent side, they're suing these companies, and they never intended to do anything with their IP. I think that's disingenuous. You know, just to patent, like I could go to the nano space and patent a whole bunch of shit in nano, and then big companies that start doing the work have to pay me. I just think that's so disingenuous.
Legal Boom is taken, but it's associated with someone like promoting gun rights.
I know, and it won't be trademarked either. You watch when you check the trademark. So you go, that's what always happens. So you go Legal Boom USA. Trust me, that site's old, tired, they're not even using it, it's probably not even active. So there are 7 billion sites on there, and most of them are doing nothing. There's 150 million coming on this month. So just, go Legal Boom USA, and you got it for $9, and we're set. And we may never use it. And we'll let it expire, and we won't renew it. But it's worth having it, just in case we want that.
Yeah. Goodness, well, thank you. I have so much. I'm so excited.
And no one's going to confuse you on a trademark with a guy doing gun rights.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're in different segments completely.
We'll get you great branders. You know, I've got a brander in New York that's just so good, not expensive. And I mean, they've done the biggest things out there. There, you just love you. She likes to do things that have a spiritual, you know, social contribution, and she likes working with women leaders. And she just. Every agency in the world wants her. She's the top brand. You Google search her, Cheryl Hills, and you'll see her branding, Cheryl Hills, New York, and you get her resume and stuff, and you'll say, holy shit.
Well,
she taught last month. She was there from New York, but I only get her like at Christmas time. She's so busy until those guys start winding down for the holidays. I can't break her free. She just did Hewlett Packard, you know, because they're split into two companies and want to rebrand all that. And she did Pricewaterhouse the year before. She does big firms.
Okay. Well, Dennis, I'm so excited about your different input that you had with the different, taking my idea and just really exponentially, but everything you said is in aligned with my genuine interest in really where my strengths are, too. So it's perfect.
Well, you know, I'm an investment banker. I've given you the prediction and control elements, the right profit centers, the right sequences, and we'll get this cemented. There's a lot. I put up Mount Rushmore, and you can see in your bones now, Abe and, you know, Washington and so forth. The problem is I don't have enough puzzle pieces up on that yet so that you really can see them. You filled it in with your mind. What's really there is just the grass and the buffalo. But you know it's there. And so I need to put more pieces up. So the doing of all this, like when I get through the 3-day capital class, $2.5 million is not going to seem like a lot of money. And 25 investors, that's not a lot of people at $2.5 million in the bank. And you've got your first capital, and you're a viable company that's a development company. The money's for developing all the final business plans, feasibilities, and to really start engineering the sequences. We need to pay people to do that. We need to do it well. And then we don't want to spend the investor money until we have the second round coming. So if we spend the lake, we're raining new money on the lake. It never goes down. And then by the time the income is coming in, we'll have that war chest of $15 million to go past 2.5, and you know the income will start to take over. I mean, we'll get 1 million people, and you're doing $100 million a year just off the website. You know, income is taken over, and the share value for all the shareholders is rising very rapidly. But the front end cost, how do we brand cheaply so we don't advertise to tons and tons of people who are not entrepreneurs, will never use our site, but we paid to reach them. Say that's television, you know. Mm-hmm. We do that last. You know, remember when I talked about the Legal Boom magazine?
Yes.
We can have two journalists from the journalist group at the junior college. They can write the magazine. We drop it every 4 months. We can go to onesource.com and get every entrepreneur that has 3 or less employees, because they're your do-it-yourself group. They're the group that don't have the money for the lawyer. Once we get up to entrepreneurs with 10, 15, 20, they've got lawyers. They're going to use lawyers. They're not going to go do a do-it-yourself site.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So the biggest group of them, there are 34 million of them that are less than 5 employees. So we can get the zip codes just around you and drop that magazine 4 times a year. They will keep it at coffee tables. They won't throw it out. And they're going to your website. Now, it's like 90% of the people get the magazine will go to the website. And so they're going to listen to your radio show because that will be advertised. And you can predict and control that so cheap. You know, we can print that magazine for 22 cents a book. We can print it for $1 a book, depending on how fancy you want to make it. And I'm telling you, you're going to get, I think you're just going to find these mechanisms of creating a lower cost way to make sure we're ramping up the income are going to be fail-safe. Now, the product, you know, I'm allowing a lot of time, like 18 months to 2 years, to develop the product. I mean, you've got to do this right and do it well. And Ken Courtright can develop the whole thing, by the way. His team, I said he's a Fortune 5000 company. Roop kind of leads in the game space. And you'll interview him, you know, but at the end of the day, it might be that Jeff Lamb becomes enough of a confidant. I mean, I know Jeff Lamb and you don't, but you two are kind of going to click. And I just think you'll trust his advice. And in this digital space, he's a better expert than I am in what you're trying to do, except he knows the high end. He's worked with 120 companies that are large. I've worked with all the small companies for 27 years. I'm the largest entrepreneurial organ. Just CEO space launch, you know, when we go out and tell everybody to go to the site, that's going to be your first launch. Your investors are going to be fine when we do that. We create viral just ourselves. We're big enough to create it. So it won't be the ball game, but it'll be a good, you know, it's better than launching cold.
Yeah,
you won't launch cold. But what happens too, you're lending yourself the money to go to CEO space. I mean, if it's 2 credit cards and you're gulping, when you get there, you're going to get through, and we're going to develop this, really develop it. You have a lot of help. You'll never be alone again. You'll have a whole team put together. And then when you come back, we'll have the documents and be able to do the private placement. Now say, can I do a private placement before we come? Yeah, do the business. And go to SEC.gov and pull down 506C. That's the new private placement format that we can do general solicitation. We don't have a pre-existing relationship with the client. Right? So 506C, it's 506D, but it's Rule C for the exemption that we're going to claim. That's the exemption we're going to use. Okay? And that, then you go to just Google and go free PPM or free private placement. It's just like business plans. You get all these templates.
Yeah.
And pull one up and modify it. In our place, short is better. Less is better. Not overstating. We're a pure development company. All the feasibilities will come out of this round. Shareholders are getting a low price at $1.25 to help us develop the concept of feasibility. And the second round launches the operation and the branding. You just write it up, call me when you have questions, and you could have it ready to go by then. But we have to file the Reg D form. It's a 5-page form where your officers, where it's real. So, you know, are you with Westlaw?
Or yeah, Lexus. Yeah.
Well, you've got a buddy that you could go use his Westlaw, and I'm saying you just pull it up. And so that's easy, and you can get the... Mm-hmm. The Reg D ones at SEC, I mean, you can get it free. You just print it from their site. And so And they have some other things. They have some small business tips on raising money and all that in booklets and pamphlets. And they could be useful in your case. Because the government wants you to take that and get it out. I mean, they want you to develop small business. And so we have to, the two things you have to keep in mind, we have to file the Reg D form in the state the investor lives before you offer the securities. Now, you can talk about the business, and you can qualify the investor and indicate what you're going to be offering them, but you can't offer the security until these forms are on file in their state. Now, if you file them from the hotel, FedEx, right at the desk, and you track it on FedEx system and show that they were picked up the next day and you've got that printed page, that's all you need. Proof that they have it on file and that it was delivered, you can offer to that Arkansas resident that day in Nevada. So that's your umbrella protection. Does that make sense?
It is. It does. And I mean, I need to read up more on private placement. It's an area the law I've never dealt with.
Yeah, I know, but it's not. It's really not that. I mean, this is your own. You're an issue offer. It's you doing it yourself,
mm-hmm.
And it isn't ever going to cause you. I mean, you're not going to have any trouble with this. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And you'll do it properly and ethically and morally, and you just this insulates you doing it good. All that this required is full disclosure. This is a brand new company with no history that's starting up. What it has is its IP. And you file for some trademarks and copyright protection on the plan. And that's it. And you do the business plan first, and the private placement documents are lifted from the business plan. Because they're just a template for the marketing section, the risk factor section. What risk factor? They're bigger established companies, LegalZoom, Incorporate.com, and some others, and you're in a niche that you don't think they're in, but there is. They could come into this niche. They could try and copy you. There's all the opportunities for that, but you feel that you have a unique niche and will dominate, like LegalZoom has, the individual market. You're going to dominate the small business market. And so the only other competition is prepaid legal, which is a multi-level marketing program. And you feel that by direct selling, you'll find a very big market that doesn't want to engage in multi-level marketing for legal services. And boy, that's going to strike a nerve with everybody.
I do not, I'm not a fan of the prepaid legal services either. We get clients who, I've had a couple of matters where clients went initially through the prepaid legal and you have to come in and clean up the mess. But, you know, that's just two, I've had two cases of that. That's not everyone. I'm sure it works for some people.
If you discount in today's market an overtaxed lawyer, it's just an overtaxed lawyer, and you discount their time, you're not going to get the quality of work.
No, you're not.
I mean, does anybody go to a heart surgeon and say, I'd like to pay you 2/3 less?
No.
Before you cut me open. Why do you do that? Well, that's what they're doing with lawyers. It's the stupidest thing. It's like, this is legal, is open heart surgery on your business. Do you want the surgeon standing over that open heart of yours to be the most idiot buffoon that shouldn't even open and close? Do you want the surgeon to be accomplished on that procedure and have done it 1,000 times? And then do you want to discount him 2/3 of his fee? How do you think he's going to work in there? He's liable to just throw up his golf balls in there. We're human beings, man. If we've got the expertise to do the open heart surgery, pay us our market rate,
pay
we'll do a great job for it. Yeah. And then once they see it like that, it's so much better. But, you know, you've got to remember, in fairness, the only way the public sees lawyers now is, and this has been bad for us in the society, America, is that a very small cadre of media people have put in the movies and television that lawyers are villains.
Yeah.
I mean, you used to have a Matlock or someone who was a hero. We don't have any heroes now. Think about any lawyer hero. All the movies, all the television, the lawyer, the bad guy, the evil guy, the guy cheating you, the shyster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I just gave a talk today in front of other lawyers and judges on another form of alternative dispute resolution, collaborative practice, and part of the theme of the speech was, let's turn the legal profession reputation around, let's earn our respect as problem solvers and not liars and cheats, but we are the problem solvers
that
help people.
That
was my talk today.
You did that. Oh, that's so good.
I did that talk today, yes.
So collaborative practice is what we stand for. We stand cooperative capitalism, collaborative capitalism in law and medical practice, that are in all our people that adopt that thrive. And then in the legal profession, you start out your speech, same speech, keep that speech because that'll be demanded. Others are going to ask you for that. That's really good. That should be at ABA. It should be a keynote. And you've got to get up and submit a speech to ABA and say that your next deal I'd like to speak. But tell them, you know, when you start, say, ladies and gentlemen, every movie, every film makes us villains. And we're now in 2015 with the number one hit cable show in the country is Let's Call Saul. You and I cannot go down to Let's Call Saul. That can't be how our profession is defined. Any of you watched that yet?
I haven't. I'm probably one of the few people that haven't watched Breaking Bad either.
No, but you should go watch AMC's you know, you can get the reruns and just watch it free tonight. And watch one or two versions. It's going to make you throw up. I mean, you can't debase it lower than Let's Call Saul. There's no way to do it. I mean, when you think of a bunch of... Because I know the writers, you know, three Jewish guys writing this script, but I'm saying they just, you know, they're having fun making fun, but it's like it's harmful to society to think that's who lawyers are. And by the way, when he depicts big law, when Saul goes in to negotiate with big law firms and stuff, they're totally the crooks. You feel that Saul has
the good guy.
You want Saul to win against the big firms.
Wow, yeah.
And it's so wrong. Where the big firms are protecting vested and real interests properly, ethically, it's just monstrous, really. You know. Well, I mean, you know, that's you're one of the important players, and as you get influenced with this and you get up there, think, too, about down the road having a legislative voice. When this company's big, think as a goal, I'm going to start a not-for-profit or a PAC, and I'm going to be a voice in Washington. Take a couple of young girls getting in poli-sci or graduating in, you know, political science law out of Georgetown and just hire them and let them be a lobbyist full-time in town. And speak for your voice to get some judicial legislation out, you know. And I really do think that, you know, top of the list of the nation to get back where we need to be, we need grand jury reform. I mean, we should do that as a nation. You know, that we're, you know, the biggest city in this country is 5 million people locked up, and 80% have no victim and no violence. It's primarily minor drug and alcohol crimes. And putting people away for 11 years that smoked a doobie, you know, there's a woman in Utah, she got 11 years for personal use of pot and took away from her children. The children went to foster homes. And, I mean, I just think, you know, there's so many real crimes that we need law enforcement freed up for. And the taxpayers can't afford to lock them up. Put the alcoholics and the drug users in programs and put them back out in work. Give them a... What we never did is give them a program.
We have the highest
job.
Percentage of our citizenship in prisons out of the developed countries.
No. I'm an expert in this. That's not right.
Yeah.
We have the highest per capita of incarcerations per 100,000 in the world by far. More in the world. We have more than Mexico. We have more than... Take the most corrupt scumbag company. We have more than Iraq. We have more than Iran. More than Iran. Mm-hmm. More than China. The free, I keep saying we win the war on crime by tearing those suckers down, having a new model. And so I'm for the bad, violent offenders going right to Supermax, whatever you want, as far as repeat, you know, give them a break the first time and serve hard time and long time. If you violence, if violence is involved and victims are involved, a whole other story. But, you know, self-abusive stuff that's 80% of the population, they just don't need to be there. And I'm telling you, I'm big on that cause. But grand jury reform, we need tort reform. I'm for torts. Boy, I don't want torts to go away. But there's a way to get tort reform where the bar's okay, and we just need to look at it.
No, it really is the court that the rules are in place. They're not just being enforced. There's already rules that prevent frivolous conduct, but they're not. Judges are afraid to dismiss a case as a frivolous case under the existing rules because trial court judges don't want to be reversed on appeal. So it's easier for a trial court judge to say, I'm just going to let this case go to trial and let the jury decide.
Well, the third thing, I think, is judicial empowerment. I think that sentencing should be the individual judge. I don't care how abusive the judges are. It's worse than laptop sentencing. I'll give you an example. This judge has a case, this 19-year-old kid, and the kid is involved in an altercation where he's on the side of the screen, and the girl he was sleeping with last night, and his girlfriend for some time, is now lip kissing, etc., his best friend. And they get caught, and the best friend is touting him and telling him, screw you, you lost your girl. I was with her last night. And he's just touting him. And so he comes through the screen. He doesn't even realize he got these big kids on the football team. He just walked through the screen, came over and hit the guy. Didn't hurt him bad. Didn't have to go to the hospital, no stitches. But, I mean, bruised and down. He deserved to be hit, too. And they charged him with attempted manslaughter, criminal breaking and entering with intent to commit harm. I can't remember, but he got over 10 years. And he should have had an anger management program. You know, I mean, a girl, this kid that I know, was 16, and he had been dating for a while. This girl was 13, just turning 14, and she had very abusive, tough parents. And so he's trying to get away from the abuse, so he takes her away. He's going to live with her and marry her and everything. You know, they don't know, they're so young. And so he, you know, gets arrested for kidnapping. And then they charge him with sexual assault and sexual assault with a minor. And now he's done his prison time, which was years, and she admitted on the record that it was all voluntary and nothing was consensual. And the parents, who were abusive anyway, just, you know, prosecuted the max out of it. And the guys didn't know what hit him. This little Christian family in Utah, Mormons, didn't know what hit him. And the guy gets out, and they won't let him stay in the United States. And they insist that in Australia, he carries the sexual ban for life, that he's a sexual predator. Now, the judge would have sentenced differently, except they didn't have any standard recourse. They had to sentence by the guidelines. And this is where we've got to change. This whole guideline sentencing, that's a failed model, and we need to reform it and give the discretion. Because the judge is the only one or the jury that understands the facts of that case.
Yeah. But even with the guideline sentencing, there's still mistakes. I think NPR recently did a report on how people with the same amount of, it was a marijuana example, the same amount of marijuana on it, and one was white, one was black, and the white kid gets like a few sentences or gets off, and the black kid goes to jail for a few years.
Yeah,
how is there standard guidelines? Where is the disparity? It has to just be probably more socioeconomic. One was able to hire an attorney, and the other one wasn't. A good attorney versus a poor attorney.
I think I think we need to get programs instead of prison, and we need to have work programs so when they get done with programs, they can get a job. They have a six-month work program, and I think we can run it federally and do a great job, run it state and do it, and save so much money over incarceration in prison, and also save society. And we used to be a society where the laws of this land would let three bad guys go to make sure one good guy didn't go to jail.
Yeah.
And today, USA did a 7-page article, that's pretty big, front page and 7-page last January, on not only the most incarceration, so I got a lot of those numbers from that article, but also that we are now putting lots of good people away, and they had numbers of how the reversals of cases are going and the innocents that are going to prison under these because we don't have grand jury reform. And so grand jury reform would take taxpayer burden off and get the compass on the real criminal things we want to solve. We just need, once every 100 years or so, things change so much. We need a change. And then the judge should tie, you know, is this guy a financial terrorist? Is this guy, you know, just a black guy who smoked a doobie? Let the judge know. They see these things day in and day out. Now, get a prejudiced judge. I don't care if it's laptop or the judge, she'll do it. And we'll get that. We're not going to have, you know, there'll be, get a different, what's judicial oversight? Have a different judicial oversight. We have a chance to reinvent justice. It's 2015. I think we have the best lawyers alive, the best educated, the best qualified, the best experienced. We never had the internet before. I'm saying now is the time to do it with these brains, with this kind of, so, you know, as you get powered financially, keeping your brain, if you want to go that way, when you're ready, you know, you say, Bernie, I now want to have a private meeting and send the jet down, and we're going to figure out how to put this thing in the Beltway together, and we're going to do judicial reform. And I'll start working with you, and I'll put our lobbies behind your lobbies.
Very exciting.
I mean, that's
very needed. You know, very much needed. It's very,
well, let's build you up for a few years, and then as we get older together, and we'll start doing that. Well, that'd be fun to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
And we have a lot of lawyers that will help. Lock and Lord will help. We have big law firms that could come behind that and sign on to it. We can really rally resources when we get into that. So I'm glad I want to thank you for the extra. This took a lot more time than you were expecting. But I'm hopeful, you know, this was really useful and solid. And, you know, we're kind of coming together philosophy and philosophically. And those films I've selected are really going to be useful. You're going to enjoy them. And I'd start before you go to bed tonight with Dennis Long. You know, get a shower, a bath, and when you're just in the bathroom, ready to go, just watch them. They're short. And he's speaking lawyer to lawyer. You'll really enjoy the content. And he'll be there, remember. So I think his expertise in creating this, it's the kind of thing he'd get real excited about. And he's not your average lawyer. He's one of us. And he's, he teaches law in Beijing as well. I mean, he's got a tremendous global footprint, and he's just very knowledgeable. And you're going to find, you know, you start with Dennis, and you're, you know, snorkeling, and then you're double dank diving, and then you're going down deeper and deeper. And with Marlon Paz, the Lock and Lord, I mean, this man just saved the financial system of the world with four others.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, he just walked around helping an early stage entrepreneur. He and his law partner gave an unsolicited proposal to make. They evolved this over a lot of work. The board approves it. And at the end of last year in October, they agree they're going to break Hewlett Packard into two companies.
Mm-hmm.
That shoots the stock to the moon, save the stock, reposition the strategy. And then they gave Lock and Lord $50 million to implement it, the regulatory agency, state and federal. And so, you know, that guy that does that and is sitting with enormous M&A projects where they're doing the M&As is given a whole week of his time to early stage entrepreneurs. I mean, what kind of person is that?
That's amazing. That's wonderful. That's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't. He's so sweet and nice when you talk to him, but in this area of raising money that you're going into, he's the world authority. And for the last 5 years, they've been working with us. He was with the SEC, so we were working with him at the SEC. But we were working with the SEC, too, and the state security regulators on the new law. So when you're 5 years buried in writing that law, I've got the 870-page bill on my laptop.
Isn't it amazing how long bills can be? It's just amazing.
I think the Federal Reserve Act was 57 pages, and these bills today, but, you know, like Obamacare, I think that's 8,000 pages.
Yeah,
and,
everything gets passed
on to it. Yeah, I mean, it's just trying to understand, you know, the whole industry made around not just law and CPAs, but just the interpretations of the intentions of these laws, you know, the society's more complicated and these laws have evolved. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, needs to be done, I call it a constitutional conference every 100 years. And I think you retire things and change things without a 3/4 vote. And I think you need to revise it. And I think you also look at, laws need to be, there ought to be sunshine element. Like every law has to be reviewed or sunshine's expired in a certain time frame. Like, is this law good for 25? Is this good? Is a law good for 1,000 years? You know, and I mean, all the new thing. I mean, is intelligent robots, should they have rights? Should they get married? Gays get married? Should intelligent robots get married?
I think I only took one philosophy course in college, but it was on artificial intelligence. And, you know, it was a fascinating course. So, you know, dealing with some of, you know, the rights, when does it become, you know, a soul? When does it just, you know, at what point
in thinking,
you look in components? And that was many, many years ago, and now you're starting to see it really becoming into fruition.
But as we've gotten more information and understanding, right, I think an elephant's a person. I think a dolphin's a person. And I think they ought to have personal rights. I don't think we have, as a species sharing the planet with them, the right to slaughter them into extinction.
I agree.
So we can get an erection in China.
Stewards of the earth.
But it's only ignorance. You know, we're going to extinct the rhinos so Chinese guy can get an erection. And it's ignorance. It's like, guys, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. You're killing all these animals, and it's just it's a myth. It's not true. It's because it makes you, here, use, you know, if rhino horns are so important to them, we're going to kill all the rhinos, make a synthetic. Here's the exact essential chemical of the rhino horn in this pill. Give that to them, you know, but I suppose they'd still go for the gold. And that's what, when you get that culturally 4,000 years of it, how do you get rid of it?
I don't know.
Human ignorance is our biggest problem. I mean, it's just, you know, education. I mean, I believe all prejudice, once you're educated to a level, you celebrate diversity. It's all celebrated. You don't punish diversity. It's the most interesting thing about us.
Yeah.
You're Sunni, you're Shiite, you're Wahhabi. Tell me about your food, your dance, your clothes, your song, your game. Tell me about your politics. Tell me how you worship God. It's all so interesting. I'm learning so much from you.
Yeah.
What are these?
I mean,
they'll shoot you.
What's scary is, because I believe that and I'm like that, but what is scary is there was a backlash against, you know, intellectuals or the educated people, it seems.
Yeah.
And that takes away, it celebrates people who don't do that. And I just,
and
puts down those that do.
Well, I don't put down any of them. I say there's, I celebrate your But the backlash against academia or intellectuality or whatever, you've always, I mean, what do you think the Paris Revolution was? That's a bunch of people in the bottom yawning off of your head.
Yeah.
I mean, because the masses are not well educated. And I'm saying, why? Because we failed and we should be educating them because our whole society will reinvent itself. And let me tell you, at the end, we'll put this because you ought to have a paper later. The reason education is broken, and it's just study and research, but people don't understand. If you go to superteaching.org, that's my kind of life's work, is a new educational breakthrough for classrooms. But, you know, forever, I can't even tell you what it's taken to get this patent issued all over the world and all the things with that. But at any rate, in education, my famous line is, if you want to get an education in poli-sci, and you want a political education, go to Georgetown, get a degree, and go to the Beltway. And you will have a high school diploma. If you want a graduate degree, go to Sacramento and work in the state legislature. If you want a PhD, go to any school district in America, and you'll learn it in about 18 months. Because you'll find there isn't one person there that cares about the education of your children on the Board of Trustees. What they care about is the brother-in-law going to get the asphalt contract on the school expansion? And who's going to get the temporary room contract to bring the temporary rooms in to put them on the asphalt? And how much money can they make out of that when they approve it at the next supervisor meeting? And when you're in it enough and you see it, you just can't believe it. And then the reason it's broke is because of a lack of vision, common vision. And what's broke is we have a curriculum that has been monopolized since the 50s by merger and acquisition until we only have three educational giant publishing houses like McGraw-Hill left. And they statuted in the states that the accreditation process is so expensive for any curriculum to get a credit, to be accredited, and it has to follow their curriculum hard books in an obsolete world when it's all digital. And those books have to go down a conveyor belt to those parents, so their kids are coming home with a backpack of those obsolete books. And every year they get that billions coming in from the new crop of consumer buyers in education. And in the 1860 period, we stopped grade education, and we started mass education for the millions coming off rural America to factories and industrial revolutionized America. And they needed memory bots, people that could work in cubicles on logistics and supplies. Mm-hmm. And they needed memory bots on the factory line, repetitive processes. And they created memory bot education. And so now we're in the entrepreneurial world after World War II. It's all entrepreneurialism. And in the schools, does anybody learn how to use an ATM, how to get a car loan, what credit points are? Does anybody learn how to do a home closing? Do they learn how to start their own business? How to actually be entrepreneurial. So what they learn is to memorize all 50 state capitals, to memorize a bunch of old war dates, 1642. It's going to be on the test, you know. When was the Magna Carta signed? And these are kids who know the sentence answer to one key question. That's why God invented search. And these kids are so fast-minded, they're just tortured within this framework of memory botism. And as you watch it, you just can't believe we're still doing it in this time frame. And the kids, when they get anything entrepreneurial, we run a teen class, and in 90% of the teen graduates over 20-some years now own their own business rather than work in one. Just give them the education. And the preponderance of them stay in school. Then they stay in school because the learning, especially in higher education, now has relevancy to their entrepreneur journey. But it's just so, I can't understand why we don't teach the basics of entrepreneurialism in the age of the entrepreneur across public education and reinvent educational framework and
teaching. It's certainly not a systematic approach. You know, my high
we need to turn out a nation of entrepreneurs. We're trying to turn out a nation of mathematicians and engineers. So what? What jobs? We need a nation of inventors. We need an invasion of super creatives. The engineers will come up and create inventions. We'll get all those. We're not going to frame out our engineering and mathematical schooling. But we need to retool the framework. We need to throw, I mean, they're trying to do it now, but they won't let them because Obama's going to veto it. But we need to take the No Child Left Behind Act and throw it out. You know, it's an act that says in the poorest schools, in the poor, the Watts, the Bronx, they are going to get less money because their grades are falling and they're not getting the EBITDA average we want on FCAP. And so the wealthy kids in the suburbs are going to get all the money now, and the poor kids are going to get frozen more and more out. The poor kids need $6 to $1. They need $6 to $1. And there won't be any projects. Well, vacate them. Educate them. You can't educate them like you're educating a middle-class kid out there. These guys are coming through, chased to school and killed with a baseball bat because they won't share their bubble gum in Chicago. Mm-hmm. These kids have a different set of rules. They're just surviving the day is hard. We need to make our schools safe. We need to make our schools exciting. We need to be the most exciting place to get an education on the planet. It's not hard, and we have the brains, but we don't have the political will because the monopolies are challenged with the billions that would be taken from their franchise if we change the existing model. So the whole country is slave to a bunch of old economics.
Yeah. Well, that's this is very interesting.
Well, you've got a big part of changing things, so I think that you're on a hot button. I'm in your space. There's nothing like it. There's no legal there's no place to go for an entrepreneur small business that makes any sense. And I really look at cutting the market. LegalZoom is for, you know, I don't know, a fixed income Social Security person that wants to make his own will or something. But any entrepreneur needs, you know, LegalZoom.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a lot of people like it. When you start talking about this like that, watch mm-hmm. the difference of people's eyes and et cetera. But remember, until we get a little protection on, you know, do the business plan to get it copyrighted, get NDEs up, and use NDEs liberally. At CO Space, everybody signs an NDE to get a name badge. So when they have a name badge, you're safe to talk to them. Yeah. We've never had IP taken out of there because we have to have a place that's protected. And when you do CO Space, my attorney is Maria Speth. Her film's on there, Talking to Lawyers. And you might watch that one, too, over the weekend. And if you want to phone her, just ask Michelle for her number. And she's represented us as corporate counsel for 17 years. She knows my wife, my children, my family, my hemorrhoids. There's nothing in my life, my finances, everything. She knows everything. So if you want due diligence and you can tell her I waive client attorney privilege, anything you need to know about us, you're loyal to a lawyer for a person who's been coming consistently for that time frame. So she can just tell you, you know, as a lawyer herself who has been through this whole thing of single practicing and all of that. She's a litigation specialist. She just wants to be in court. You know, a lot of people don't want to be in court.
Yes.
But if you have to be, you want Maria Speth. And she walks in with her team and Sony's shaking. She gets huge awards. She never loses. She's Yoda. And she's got one of those minds where the case management system doesn't even matter because she never's dropping a bucket. Juries love her, and she's, I don't know, she's ethical, truthful, she won't violate. She's one of the most ethical lawyers I've ever met in my life. She just, I can't praise her enough for how she operates. But, you know, when you want a gladiator, she's a little she's a little tiny size two girl. She really will fool you at a table. And she just uses judo. I mean, she'll let you win and just everything's winning. And you're just, you know, you're at the depot, for instance, and then she'll do that. Well, you know, I believe I have a right for these final questions in this final block, and I just ask these final things. And then she's ripping the guy's asshole out. I mean, it's just carved right out. And it's like their other attorneys are caught blindsided, just falling to the floor, and they set themselves up, and they underestimated their opponent. And she just, they can't even take that witness on the stand now at all. In front of the jury. I mean, that's just like whether, you know, she'll walk out with me, you know, and we'll go downstairs. It's not in my case to pick it up for lunch or something. And she's, we've never had a litigation. But I'm walking downstairs and she's like, well, that was a good day. I said, you live for that. Don't you think that's toxic? And she looks over at her client and he's shaking his head. No, that's not toxic. And she goes, he doesn't think it's toxic. I don't think it's toxic. You know? And he just runs for his client. You know, just like you, when you get the 600 to 40, I mean, those are good days for you, whether he appreciates you or not. I mean, you know you did a good job. That was a good job.
That was a good job.
Let's get you out of the toxicity of this. Here's what's happened 17 years in. You've mastered this. Filing another form at the court or doing you've mastered that. The best use of your skill right now is that you're competent enough to write that private placement. You know, that saves $15,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's brand new development firm. I'm not so concerned about a Marlon giving us a high-end protection document because I don't think you'll be any risk. You'll do a full disclosure offering. How could you not disclose that we haven't done anything yet?
Yeah.
It's the easiest time. You can't make it. The risk on these type of offerings is a five-year company and you omitted something. And there's a litigation tale that an attorney can say the investor was omitted to know this or that. In a brand new startup venture, there's no way. And put in there, well, it'll be in the offerings you download, but two key sentences in the offering. Bold caps, underlined. They're always bold caps, underlined. Management has full and sole discretion to change the use of proceeds, which are suggestions only and guidelines only, and that future events as they unfold in a rapidly developing development phase company will dictate why discretionary management change frequently the use of proceeds. So there can be no construction of use of proceeds at this point in the foundation stage of the offering. So it's very clear that you're not obligated to any use of proceeds stage. And then second, because you can't make one that you can stick to at this stage. And then second, when you're doing this, you want to put what I said earlier, that all profits will be reinvested for at least 60 months to help globalize and bring the company to its full potential. And then you want a sentence that says that the subscriber understands, or the investor understands, that this is a startup development phase company and that it will take substantial capital to develop the plan to income, and that it, one of the risks may be that if future capital is not acquired or raised, the venture may fail and the business plan may not be able to be implemented. And substantial reliance on management that future capital can be raised is implied in this document, but cannot be assured or guaranteed in any fashion. So you just made a, you know, it's like, well, the investor knew that if we didn't raise future money, we couldn't make it. So that's another caveat that gives you, you know, absolute umbrella protection. But if you fail to put that in, it can be, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you about that.
Yeah.
So those elements are the most important. And if you want to pass it by me, I'll give you, you know, red lines and some proofing responses to it. I hate reading those, but I'm, you know, read more than most people alive, so I can help you with that.
Well, thank you so much for all your time tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, this is very exciting for my community. And I just want to tell you, you've got a good product here. This is a good product. And at the end of the game, here's what we do. We shorten time and we shorten the money cost to get you there, right? You're making a shareholder advance to the company to come to our class. And I hate to even call it a class, but the result of being there is, as you get investors and raise money there, you'll pay yourself back from the first investor, like the first 50,000 in. You pay yourself back for the entire cost of going to CEO space. So now you're flush. See? And that'll happen quickly. And that's appropriate. That should, you can put it in the offering. Yes. Shareholder advances for trademarks, copyrights, et cetera, attending the CEO space conferences to grow and develop the business are estimated at $25,000 and will be repaid to the law firm upon first investment.
Makes it sound doable. It is doable.
That's what it is doable. That's what you just disclosed. You know what I'm saying? So that gives you your normal legal fees. I would build a company, normal legal fees, for your patents, your trademarks, and all that. And they say, well, why are you getting 80%? Because I contributed the IP. Well, what's the IP? It's what I gave you. Your toolbox and everything else is in addition. But it's the framework of what I gave you. If you didn't have yours, I couldn't have suggested mine. So I just took what you had as profit centers and took them to their maximum market potential, and I packaged it in Christmas paper with new profit centers that allow us to predict and control the audience coming in to use it. Otherwise, we're advertising out like you thought, and the ads fail and we don't get the response. And do we have the money to keep advertising like that for 2 years? We don't even know if we're ever going to get a response. So I'd rather use radio, book publishing, make you a celebrity author, speeches and everything that's going to feed the website, than have the super site picking up the real money and building the games, because the games are going to be phenomenal. And people are going to go nuts for this. I mean, this is going to be the new deal. And think also, I mean the real stuff, like a board game. You know, where you're playing a board game that's called the legal game. And we all play that like the cash flow game with Robert Kiyosaki. They had $100 million with that, and Sharon designed that game. Sharon, look, she did all that. So when you have a board game, then you can make a game for K through 12 entrepreneurs, a game for 7 to 13, a game for teens, and they're all more advanced, and then you keep having, like with the teens, they have lots of danger and stuff when they break laws or don't do things with the contract, like they're going down different kinds of virtual worlds, and they're finding that, you know, in that game, they're going to be constantly, they love this, the teens, they'll be going up elevators into boardrooms and suites like Donald Trump and stuff like that, but Trump will screw them, and they'll go back to zero, and they'll need their get-out-of-jail-free card, and all this stuff will go on. They'll even go to jail in the game. You know, we'll get them so they're, you know, it's like dying, like when they die in the war game. It's like,
I die. Yeah.
You know, yeah, how do I get out of jail? Well, you got to get more energy and pulse. And so you got to do good things in jail to be able to get out. And, you know, they'll never get tired of playing that. And the kids, I mean, the parents will want them to play that game. That's a wholesome. It helps them get a home loan. You know, they'll be at home loans, and they'll be at that time, and they're sitting with the attorney, and they bring in this dolly full of documents and stack it up on the table, and they start filing these truth and credit disclosures and all these FHA disclosures, and you know how it goes, and bank disclosures and so forth, the property and title documents. They'll learn all this stuff, and then they'll turn to say, but I bought the house for $370,000, and I'm paying $1.4 million. The attorney will turn and say, well, you see out the window that the tallest building in town is the bank, and this is the difference of what you, that's called interest, son. That's over here on the full disclosure. That's the interest you pay to borrow the money. But that's not fair. That's three times the price. Yes, but that's over 20 years, son. It's 20 years they're taking the risk on you. They're betting on you for 20 years. It's not that much per year, son. And he'll never forget that his money made that high-rise bank. He'll get that. I mean, that kid will know the financial system before he got out of high school.
Yeah.
Because he played a legal game. But, you know, But just understand, that's where we need the 15. Developing those games can be $3.5
million.
And when you get them out, they do $1 billion the first year. I mean, you're talking big. That's the fifth year. That's the third to fifth year development bucket. So put the games in more costly development. Because first we develop the simple things, the toolkit, the site, the radio, the books. That we can do so fast. We're good at that.
Yes.
Now remember, when you've got the return, I didn't even mention this, that I do once every 10 years of the superstars. Sharon Lecter has 500 million readers. Jack Canfield has 500 million readers. Bob Proctor has 1.34, you have to check on the secret, please, that know his name around the world. Greg Reed has 200 million. I mean, you get these guys to sign the back of your cover that these best-selling authors, Les Brown, you know, we endorse her book. And what you do is when you come, this is boy, I'm glad we did this before I get off. You do an endorsement letter. And Michelle will tell you each of the stars' names, and you put their quote. You write the quote up. You put at the top, author release, to use your name in the back jacket of my book, will help your brand and mine. Thank you very much. This release is irrevocable and in perpetuity. And then you put Bob Proctor, in whatever quote you want from him. I just am not about this. The legal game's going to change everything. And then Bob Proctor, star of The Secret. And then each one's like that. And it's got a line for their release. And what they want is you come up to them, and they're so busy, everybody wants to get to them. And they're not there for the whole week. They're there for different time periods. So you get to them and say, would you sign this release? Bernie said you'd do this for me. And I'm an attorney, and this is going to be a great book, and I get you a manuscript long before I use it. But would you give me the release now so I can use it on the back cover? It'll help me so much with my publisher. And it'll help your brand, too, because we're going to really push this thing. And it's going to be out with a radio show behind it, and it's going to be big. And they'll sign it. And then you do the next one. And as soon as, you know, Les Brown sees Bob Proctor did, and then everybody does. He put me on there. I'm a best-selling author. New York Times, I'll sign it, you know, first. And so Bernie signed it, and then the next signed it, and they just start signing it. They like to be together on a book. It helps their brand.
It helps everyone.
Well, it helps our brands. Keeps us out.
Yeah.
So you always remember, come from that perspective, because that's the real reason they want to do it. They want to help you, but they like to be not with you know, self-published books that never go out anywhere. They like to be with bigger titles. It's appropriate for their audience, and their brand is working for them. Good?
I'm good.
See, when you're on the website and those endorsements are on there on Amazon, and those endorsements are out there, with those click, it's that cross-link to their site, their Facebook. So their audiences are seeing your book with their heroes. Oh, I better buy that. Bob says I got to get that book. That's what happens by the millions. So that's why the back cover real estate is so important, that it's existing readers who buy books who their hero is saying, you got to buy them. And you stack them up. So, God, all these winners, these are Guinness Book of Records winners saying, I got to buy this book to get this book's really good. That's what happens. If I forgot to say that, they would have gone out. I only have them all back like that once every 10 years. So it's a little judicious for you to pick their endorsements up while I got them on site. Yeah. So Michelle will help you with that. If you just say to Michelle, will you make sure I get this form signed with each one of them if they're only here for a short time? And she will walk you to do it. She knows everywhere they go, and she'll get you right to them. They all know her.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, this is a lot. But we did. I feel like we framed in them. Everything else will be execution. You've got your business plan. When you type these notes up over the weekend, you won't believe the IP that's in this. That's coming right off your tape.
Yeah,
I'm glad you taped it because we did a lot. I'm really glad you taped it. This has been a lot of fun, and I want to help you with this long term. So you just feel free to lean on me for advice and coaching. This isn't one of the things you get when you get CEO of Faith is me, and I'll just help you. And I can't be available equally for all projects, but this is large. This is a super scaled project. It uses it's right in my spot, right in my world. And so I want to help you with it. I don't want anything. I don't want any stocks or money or anything. I just want to help you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate your time tonight. I can't wait to get started on my business plan. Type it all up, organize it, and get it done.
You do it, as you debunk the tape, you'll get that for the plan, and then the plan will be easy. And then the offering document actually is very easy out of the plan. It's just that back of legal writing, and it's not hard at all. And once you have the template, it's not hard. Just remember, when you get one of the templates, when in doubt, delete. Because a lot of these have the kitchen sink in there, and you don't need that. You're not a five-year manufacturing company disclosing, all this stuff and tributaries and union problems and 15 product lines. You don't have all that disclosure. It's a very simple disclosure of a startup business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a $2.5 million offering. It's small initial offering to launch a company like this. And I'm just trying to build a balance sheet that gives you safety and get you out of law first, and then you'll be comfortable. So you think $2.5 million is so large. If I went to what I really want to raise, you'd be uncomfortable. And so the second round will be so much more comfortable for you.
It's okay for me to get out of my comfort zone. That's what I need to do. That's what I want to do.
Well, we'll walk you toward that because, as you know, what really helps there is education. We're going to train you. You're going to know. But this is a super store. Everything you want is there already. And as you study these films, you'll start to see that you didn't suspect how depth-driven this is. You didn't suspect that. If you see more films, you go, oh, I didn't know they did that. Oh, I didn't know they did that. You keep seeing, it's really good due diligence. It'll help you a lot. And so our site has lots of print. If you're a reader, it's a lot of print verification and testimonial films that go on forever. And I don't know, I think 2,000 hours on there of just, 3 minutes. Business owners talking about their business owners saying, I came, I spent the money, and I got this back. Here's what I won. Here's the victories I've had from this. It's not like 2,000 people. It's like 2,000 hours. I mean, talent, how many? And that's only 30% of the library. We don't even post the testimonial films anymore. I mean, after 2,000 hours, do you need any more?
No, I think you're good.
We got too much as the problem, really. We got to thin it down for everybody. But anyway, thank you, and I appreciate the time, and take a bubble bath.
You have a very have a very good night, and if Shannon, if you're still there, thank you very much.
Oh, you got it.
This has really been fun. Thank you all for this. This is great. This is a great project for America. Thank you. Bye, buddy.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye. Thanks.